Well, good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel for this Wednesday. Right, Wednesday. That's the day, Alan. It's Wednesday, and we are. It's the 17th of October, and if you are just joining us, we have ended the fund drive. The fund drive ended about 3 minutes ago, and $1 million made in 2 days and 3 hours.
Incredible.
Absolutely incredible. So what we're going to do is we have Malcolm Nance is going to join us for the panel this morning on the phone. He's in Los Angeles. He's going to join us by phone. We may have another panelist or two coming in, but what we want to do is thank the people who were in the last minute who really brought us to the end of the fund drive. We're going to thank them. Then we'll take a brief break, and then we'll be back with our panel and start going over all the stuff.
And not only that, Joe, but let me just say, because we always say our, this is a great time to write a letter.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. If you have thoughts on what's going on, we'll get to all of that in just a minute.
Reed?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you to Nancy Schulman at Bloomberg Realty of Pittsfield. And thank you to Michael Helm of Warwick, New York. And thank you to Eileen Cutler of High Falls, New York. Eileen Cutler and Paula Luxon. We're all proud to be members of WAMC family. Okay. Thanks for all you do to bring us together and bring us hope. And I'm not going to read what everybody's getting because we did that already. Anonymous from North Bennington. Thank you to Megan of Schenectady, New York. Alan, listen to Roselle. Carl Brosh and Ralph Thomas of Arlington, Vermont couldn't make the drive without you. And Ann Wary of Lenox, Massachusetts. And thank you to great friends Whit Sanford and Tom Miner of Shelburne Falls. They're always there with us, and they're always generous. They're great. And Joan of Lenox, Massachusetts. Thank you, Joan. I was going to give you the number, but we don't have to anymore. And thank you to Mike Colino of Grenville, New York. And thank you, everybody, for what you've done. And that's what I got in front of me, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Thanks to everybody. And if for everybody who put something into the lockbox, for everyone who helped us with challenges, for everyone who has been with us throughout the drive, to all our volunteers, to all the staff, thank you so very, very much. It's, we come together and we bring this thing together. And it's amazing what a community and what a family has been built by you, sir.
You know, it has been built by all of us.
Yes,
and we all put something
into it. We
still
need an architect, you know.
Well, thank you. You know what? It's so great, and then you put everything you've got into it, and then it's kind of exhausting. But in the end, then you sleep for 3 days. But it is terrific, and it is with great gratitude that we thank the staff, who worked so hard, unheralded, and we thank you, Joe, and Sarah, and Selma, and all the, and Ian, and all the on-air people, the night crew. It's just unbelievable what goes into one of these things. It may look easy, but these good folks, they make it look that way.
Well, it's we're very happy that we're over the hurdle, and we look forward to seeing you in 4 months. And in the meantime, we'll move on and do what we have to do here and cover all the things. The whole point of the fund drive was to get back to regular programming, and we're going to do exactly that after this short break.
We are.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our post fund drive edition. That's a lovely way of saying that we're sort of doing this by the seat of our pants. We had a show planned, and you'll hear that show. We really didn't think we'd have a panel. We didn't know that everyone would come together so quickly, but you did, and that's wonderful, and we're thrilled. So we are going to very quickly, we have assembled the group that we have here, and we're going to talk in just a few minutes. Alan mentioned this before we went to break, and it's absolutely true. It's a great time for your letters. If there's been something on your mind over the last couple of days that has happened in the news that you would like to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. All you have to do is write to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. The same rules apply as always. Keep your letters short and to the point and on the topic. Don't include links because we can't click them on the air, obviously. And just because we're all in kind of a logy mood after the fun drive, although this is always the case, just don't use abbreviations and proofread so we know actually what you're saying. And if it sounds like I'm chiding you, I'm not. I'm just making sure that we have a smooth transition here. And also, you know, keep them short and to the point, and we'll be able to get to you this morning. So we are getting Malcolm Nance on the phone right now, and he will be joining us from Los Angeles. I believe it. He's on the West Coast. I don't know exactly what city he's in. But
well, if he told you, he'd have to kill you.
Yeah, that's right. He is a former spy, after all. But Liz is getting him on the phone, so we'll be with him in just a second. So let me take this story. I want to talk about the Khashoggi story, and we'll talk about that with you and Malcolm in just a second. But, Alan, so let's start with this one, which is the president says, he was talking to the Associated Press. He said, it's not my fault if the GOP loses the House. If the GOP loses the House, it's their fault. It ain't my fault.
You know what, Joe? After a while, you begin to understand how this guy works and what he's saying. If he thought that his people, that the Republicans could keep the House, he would say to you, oh, we're going to keep the House. This is all a bunch of nonsense. He would give you that positive spin on it, that he would be responsible for keeping it. And you, as you may remember, Joe, he was running all around the country campaigning for Republican candidates. Well, the way it's looking now is that the analysts, and, you know, the analysts were saying Trump would lose the last time.
Yeah.
So you don't really know. But the analysts are saying that the House is going to flip Democratic. But I don't trust those analysts, but because I think in the end, it's all about who comes out to vote. You know, next Saturday at 2 o'clock, I'm going to be at Berkshire Community College for Ollie doing an analysis of this coming election. And I've been thinking about what I want to say, and what you don't know is who's going to turn out. So, for example, in Texas, there are an awful lot of analysts who are writing off,
Beno O'Rourke.
Right, thank you. And
we have to help each other out today. Our minds are mushy.
Well, you have to help me more than I have to help you. I'll tell you that much right now. So, but what happened in Queens? And when you see, a long-term congressman who couldn't lose losing, that just doesn't count the people who the pollsters ordinarily discount because they're not going
to
come out.
And not to mention, look, they got it so wrong in 2016, and in 2 years have things changed that dramatically in polling that now, of course, pollsters say they didn't get it that wrong, but it seems like they did.
Well, they did.
Yeah.
And not only that, we know that they got it wrong, and we know that they continue to get it wrong. The one thing that counts is people getting out to vote. If they don't vote, they're going to get a terrible reaction to their own interests. So, you know, in a presidential election, 50% vote. That's terrible. In a by-election like these, 20% often vote. But if 25% or 30% vote, now we see certain indications. We see the money coming from the Democrats for the first time, really, that I can remember. The Democrats are squashing the Republicans with the amount of money that is coming out. But who are they coming from? They're coming from small contributors. Now, each of those small contributors goes out and votes in this election. That's going to be the wave. That will be the blue wave. That'll happen. That'll mean congressional elections. But people, if they don't get out and vote, they're not going to win. So the people who are contributing will vote, I'm sure of it. But I hope that that's an indication that what's happening here is that people are waking up and saying, you're gonna get clobbered if you don't vote.
You know, Malcolm Nance is one of our great friends, and he is, we heard a lot of love for him during the fund drive. He is a former Arabic-speaking naval intelligence counterterrorism and intelligence officer specializing in the Middle East, a combat veteran, survival, evasion, resistance, and escape expert. He is a historian and the best-selling author of the brand new book, The Plot to Destroy Democracy, How Putin and His Spies Are Undermining America and Dismantling the West. And literally, 22 minutes ago, I contacted him and said, can you be on the show? And he is, where are you? Where are we calling you at?
I'm in Los Angeles this week.
I was, okay.
Politicon.
Nice. For what, Politicon? What is that?
Yeah, it's the Politicon is the Comic-Con of politics. And it's huge this year. It's in Los Angeles. And all the big heavies are going to be out here. I'm going to make fun of Ann Coulter.
Oh, great. Do you get to one-on-one with Ann Coulter? Or?
Well, in the gigantic, ginormous green room, you're usually about have 50 heavies and their VIPs and security. And so, yeah, you can just go right up to people. But then it go out to panels, and we have discussions about things that are of importance to the nation.
So one of the things that's important to the nation is what's happened in the midterms. Alan and I were just talking about this while we were getting you on the phone, and that is the president told the AP yesterday that it's not his fault if the Republicans lose control of the midterms. This comes just days after he said that pretend I'm on the ballot in November. So what do you make of that?
Well, if he wants to turn it into a referendum about Donald Trump, I think he's only reading the tea leaves. I think that's what's happening right now. This is why you have so much energy on the side of the left. And to a certain extent, with now that people are feeling rather satisfied about the Kavanaugh confirmation, you're going to start seeing that energy dissipate on the right. But, you know, it's always going to be about Donald Trump, whether it was a midterm election or an election for dog catcher. His narcissism knows no bounds. And for the most part, I think that this midterm will be one of the most important elections in American history. And simply because we are going to be deciding whether we enable a Congress that has decided to surrender their role as the guardians of the Constitution, and whether we will validate essentially a person who, as John Adams called him, a dictator president, a tyrant president.
But Malcolm, don't you think? I was trying to say it in my post fund drive stupor. Don't you think that the fact that he's going around now saying, if we lose, don't blame me, means he knows they're going to lose?
No, I don't believe that at all. You know, and this is a guy who came against a lot of odds, and he has this horrible ability to motivate his base through fear. And this is what he's trying to say. He's trying to get them to believe that, don't blame yourself. And that sort of, psychological call works for his base, but his base's median age is 54 years old, like our age, right?
But speak for yourself.
the year you're still young, but the younger voters who are coming out, who are pouring that money in that you were saying, are almost exclusively on the side of the Democratic Party. And the question here is not just getting Democrats out to vote who vote in the midterm. This election needs to turn out at the level of the presidential election in 2016. And I think that energy is out there. I know in my district in New York 19, that energy is out there, but it has to be more than just you wishing it to happen. You have to bring yourself to the poll. You have to bring a person who didn't vote before to the polls. And that's how you affect change. And that's what the democratic system was designed for.
Well, one of the interesting things, you mentioned New York 19. There are many people who are now thinking that the Republicans are doing some things that are kind of desperate. For example, painting, putting Delgado, Antonio Delgado in a hood, and putting rap music on, and you playing the race card and doing that kind of thing. Do you think that connotes desperation?
Yeah, it's not so much desperation. I remember the last three congressional elections in my district, New York 19, where they used the exact same horrible methodologies to paint a person as some sort of alien to the district, knowing that the district, for example, with Delgado, who's African American, is 90%.
And who comes from Schenectady, by the way, and they're saying he's not local.
Yeah. Who comes from Schenectady? Well, let me tell you something. I'm a neighbor of John Faso. This is a guy who refuses to meet people in his district. I'm pretty sure anybody who's going to win this time is going to meet with his constituents. He's, this guy runs scared like a deer. And I'm not saying I'm for Delgado, but, I'm a combat veteran. My job is to call it as I see it. And this time, we need to start being honest. And let me tell you, if I can, Delgado, you have permission to speak plainly in this election. He's a Harvard,
Rhodes
Scholar.
Yeah.
Rhodes Scholar,
Harvard
lawyer. Yeah. I'll take somebody who's educated and smart rather than a career politician who's been at this since high school any day.
Now, the one thing that we heard during the fund drive over and over and over and over and over and over and over again was from people in their pledge forms, vote, 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 vote. I mean, if it was a, I mean, that was the thing, the call from everybody who came in and pledged. And we're hearing this more and more, and I'm wondering what that, I mean, obviously this is anecdotal, but how much of that is a sign of either, and this is a version of what Alan asked earlier, a version of either desperation and concern, or a true rallying cry to bring the troops together, in the sense that the Democrats are very close to changing things.
Well, you know, my New York Times bestseller, which we've had on your show, The Plot to Destroy Democracy, is about how we may be in the last leg of the American democratic system. The constitutional republic is in danger. And I don't say that as hyperbole. I'm saying that as someone who spent his entire life defending this nation and defending the Constitution. And, you know, I think this election could be a linchpin. We either go towards an autocracy and a one-party rule, or we fight and we defend our nation. And we have one weapon and one weapon only, and that's the vote. So it's not hyperbole. It's not people being, you know, over the top. This nation runs on the process. And now if you think that there was a mistake made in 2016, correct it. Give us a Congress that will defend the Constitution.
Okay, so Malcolm, let me follow up on that for a second. How crucial is flipping the House of Representatives?
100% crucial. This is not just crucial. It's critical. What's happened here is Donald Trump has managed to, with his base, to make it clear that if you are not with him personally, all right, as part of his little, the only word to use it is cult, then you will not be in Republican Party politics. And for most listeners who don't know it, I was a Republican most of my life. But, you know, now I'm considered a left of the road Democrat. And I am a Democrat now. But that's because I believe in these values. And we need a Congress that maintains the values of the nation, not the values of Donald Trump. No one would ever want their children to go out and start acting like Donald Trump on the street or in university. They would be arrested in any other circumstance. We need a Congress, and that Congress has to hold him accountable. They cannot be part of a corrupt organization, a corrupt government, which at this point is about to give Nixon a run for his money in total convictions and indictments. But we need to vote, and we need to change this Congress.
Okay,
and that's why I say it's important.
One more leading question on this, Malcolm, and that is, the polls are now showing this tremendous dissonance between men and women in their support for this guy. What do you make of that?
You know, I was just talking about that to my daughter. We were driving out to a radio interview here this morning. And, you know, when I was in the military, for those of you who know, I was a Navy chief. And if anybody knows anything about chiefs, we are the backbone of the Navy because we tell you what we think. And when I was in the Navy, I did not have time to figure out whether a person was straight or gay or, you know, transgendered or whatever. I had one job, and that was to do the mission of keeping our nation safe. And to do that, I needed all hands. I needed every person to be involved to bring their skill, their talent, their energy, right? I don't care if you're a man or woman or whatever. This is the problem with the current Republican Party. They are a misogynist party. They do not believe women should be doing anything. I think they have this madman view of the world where, you know, all the women are named Jiggles and that they should be bringing a martini to them when they come through the door and they should just shut up and stay out of man work. This is a mistake. We have all of this intellectual and energy and capital in America that could make us the dominant force of the 21st century. We are throwing it away. We are giving it to China. We are allowing a third-rate country like Russia to bully us around, even to the point where a theocratic state like Saudis are Donald Trump's, you know, favorite backers at this point, and they all suppress the energy of women. We cannot afford to lose that if we're going to survive.
So when you look at the what we're seeing right now in the polls, and of course, the question, Alan's question, comes on the heels of the Kavanaugh hearing, where, you know, you thought, well, if anything is going to ignite and to bring women into this battle, if you will, it seems that the numbers, at least what we're hearing, are not as strong. There are many Republican women who are supporting not only their representatives but also this president, and trying to make sense of that, I think, for many of us is difficult.
Well, it's difficult, but, you know, we have to allow that people are going to have diverse opinions. And a lot of women, I think the number of white women that voted for Trump was in the high 50s, and which surprised a lot of people, because during the Obama administration, there was an enormous amount of empowerment of women. But it's hard to change cultural norms, you know, instantaneously. You have to work through them gradually. I mean, look how long it took women to get the right to vote. So I allow that they're going to have their opinions, and their opinions may be wrong, but over time, they're going to figure that out. If anybody thinks that Donald Trump calling women pigs, horse face, all of these other dirty phrases, which clearly he believes from the bottom of his heart, you know, that doesn't mean that his wife's not allowed to have her opinion, even though it's fundamentally wrong as well.
So he calls Stormy Daniels horse face yesterday. And we're at a point where that doesn't even cause a ripple anymore.
This is part of the problem. What, you know, I do not allow misbehavior to occur in front of me. I'm sorry. That's just the nature of my beast. So if somebody were to say that on the street or say it in my presence, I would immediately call that person out, right? You know, we have this standard phrase we use in the military. What is your malfunction? And that's what I would say. What is Donald Trump's malfunction that he would say this? He has degraded the role of the president of the United States to a debased, you know, to a debased character like from Goodfellas, right? He thinks he's, you know, that he's playing a character in the restaurant scene from Goodfellas. Our problem is that our current politicians are not calling him out and saying, I'm sorry, we're not going to go further until you just shut up. And, you know, but we have people who are facilitating it, like, you know, I don't want to hammer on my representative, Faso, but they do. And they all laugh and chuck with each other, and they think that this is great. And what it is you're setting America back 50 years or more. And if that's what they think that they want to go back to, the 1950s, then they will lose this nation economically. We will lose in global politics. Right now, we are losing our positions as defenders of human rights, freedom, and democracy. But they have a different version of freedom. Their version of freedom is you're free to call women whatever you want. This is not what this nation spent 243 years fighting and dying for.
So that gives us a great transition, Malcolm, into the Saudi situation right now. You've said a mouthful in terms of what we stand for as a nation. What is your contemporary thinking on that?
Well, you know, I spent my entire career working in the Middle East, and I specialized working with Arab forces as oftentimes the only American, you know, African-American who could speak Arabic to them, which means that they brought me into their confidence a lot. And, you know, we call these little places where they talk diwans, right, where their true selves come out. And Donald Trump just found himself comfortable with these people. They love a guy who can be brought, right, who can be bought, paid off. They love that. It's an integral part of the Saudi culture there. Everybody knows that you got to get your 10%. They love someone who hates women or views women as just sex objects as much as they do. I mean, it's just part of the nature of men outside of the Western world, just everywhere. They go back 50 to 100 years in their views. Donald Trump is incredibly comfortable with those people, and he also loves money and luxury, and they gave that to him in spades. But does that mean that we have to compromise everything that we are because Donald Trump says that we should? You know, I mean, this nation fought and struggled and built itself to be the moral exemplar in this world. That's gone. We no longer are the moral exemplar. When we go overseas, and I just spent a week in London and a week in Paris, everybody from, you know, both American and local were saying, what is the matter with your country? You know, and this isn't a joke. This isn't something you can laugh at. We lose money. We lose trade. We lose business. We lose respect in the rest of the world. And Donald Trump thinks that he's gaining respect because the guys who are surrounding him, including the Saudis, who have just murdered an American resident and literally made him into mincemeat, he thinks that that's toughness. That's not toughness. Let me tell you something. I've worked with the Special Operations Forces. I've been in the dirt my entire career in the intelligence community. Toughnesses are people who can maintain their moral values and getting the job done. This guy is not that guy.
We have a lot of letters, and we want to get to those. But on this case of and specifically the question that Alan asked you in regards to what is happening here, this seems to be that he is warning of a rush to judgment in the disappearance of Khashoggi. He is saying that Saudi Arabia was being judged guilty until proven innocent in connection with the disappearance of the Washington Post contributor. And Mike Pompeo is saying that the Saudis promise to punish wrongdoers in the Khashoggi case. So given that, specifically, where are we right now? Because even if you take them at their word and we're waiting until they are proven guilty until proven innocent, it seems as though that is a strange card to play at this point, especially when you are so reactionary to so many other people. I know this goes exactly to what you were just talking about, but how do you put that into an overall narrative?
Well, let me tell you something. I worked in total as a military intelligence and subcontractor 36 years in this business in that part of the world. And I will tell you right now, we know what happened. We knew what happened 2 weeks ago. And it didn't have to come from the Turks. It didn't have to come from the Saudis. We have a lot of resources. You know, in the slightest rumor crops up, we have the ability to run it down. Donald Trump knew the details of this 2 weeks ago. He did. And there's just no way that he can say that he didn't. But what he does is he doesn't believe U.S. intelligence. And when he sees something that threatens his livelihood or threatens his friends and other autocrats around the world, he just ignores what's put in front of him. And what he's doing now is he's dancing, and he's dancing around the subject that he may have an incident which could break U.S.-Saudi relationships and expose Saudi Arabia for the theocratic tyranny that it is. And he just does not want to confront that reality. And so he's doing this whole Kavanaugh-like thing that you have to be innocent until proven guilty. That's not the way it works in global geopolitics. In global geopolitics, you gather the evidence through your intelligence agencies and your allies, and then those people make a determination in your own government whether this incident happened. And that's why we spend $100 billion a year collecting intelligence. Donald Trump throws that out the window and sides with his buddies.
All right. 30 minutes ago, we finished the fun drive, and here we are now in the roundtable panel. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we have lots of letters. Malcolm Nance is with us. Alan Chartok is here, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We will continue with our conversation and, again, include your letters, which you can write at panel at WAMC.org right after this. Okay, so I didn't know this, but Malcolm had to go. So he hung up, and so there you go. But we have lots of letters. We'll do that. And And then we'll go to, you and I will go to 10 o'clock. How does that sound?
Whatever you think.
Does that sound good?
Well, whatever you think is right here.
Well, let's do that. We'll go to letters, and then we'll go to 10 o'clock, and then we'll do news, and then we'll go back to the roundtable. And tomorrow we have a wonderful panel set up, and we'll be back to normal.
Okay, that's great.
Sounds great?
Yep.
Okay.
Kathleen writes, good morning, panel. Love when Malcolm is on. He said something interesting about a one-party system. Do you think that the GOP can suppress vote to the extent that this can happen, even with the demographic changes in this country? Well, I think it's quite clear that he has, that they have. They have suppressed the votes. They're doing their best to do it. They're doing it in every way possible. Can they? Yeah, they can. And it is up to the other side to make sure that get their people out and get them to vote and get them to recognize what their self-interest is in the game. What they do and what their Russian counterparts have apparently done is try to discourage people from voting, say, it doesn't matter. They're all the same. Nothing. Yeah, there's all the same. You mean the Social Security system and its existence is all the same as no Social Security system? You mean to say that not allowing kids to be able to have access to the, and their parents to have access to the SNAP system so that people can have a decent meal or that kids can have a decent education? You mean to say that those are not differences? But that's what they're pushing. And you know what? To some degree, they get away with it. In the midterm elections, you get a 20% turnout if you're lucky. You get a 50% turnout in the presidential elections. You get a 55% turnout in the elections. I'll tell you now, the Democrats are going to win. So it's just that little extra, getting the people out. So what do people do besides bitch about it? Do they say, as Malcolm just said on the air, do you canvass your own neighborhood and say, okay, are you going to come out if you're in the 19th, for example? That'll make all the difference in the world. Are you going to come out and vote this time? Can we find a way to get you to the polls? Can we help you register? Can we get you an absentee ballot? Can we? Well, all of those things are the things that have to be done. But you know what? Complaining is just one thing, but actually doing it is huge. I have a very good friend, a professor that I taught with, and if the last election is anything, he was on the phone all the time. He called everybody in the United States that he knew. He said, How can I help? Can I do something in that district? So people say, well, I can't help it because, you know, in my district, everybody's going to be blue. I say, well, first of all, that's not true in these congressional districts upstate. But there's something else here, and that is, how about calling people in other states? How about going to other states?
Right.
Those are all things that people can do, and that kind of activity makes a difference. Now, I'm not going to start a big fight. But I'm telling you that at this stage of the game, the one thing we learned in this last presidential election is the middle of the road, so-sos, you know, I'm just a little bit different from the other guy. It's not worth getting that fight going.
Okay.
But you got to get the right candidates for a run for office.
All right. More letters.
Okay. Thanks. So that was from Kathleen, and we thank her for that. Very good letter. And thank you to Peter, who says, Massachusetts ballot question number one, vote yes. Dear panel, for a nurse of 21 years at the bedside, I cannot stress too strongly the need to have maximum patient limits to nursing assignments. Now the Mass Law on Nursing Days says the hospital may assign a nurse to any number of patients they deem reasonable, and the nurse is mandated to refuse any assignment she or he believes is dangerous. Corporate hospital has spent an excess of $8 million so far against number one instead of on full-time nurses. I'll be glad to come on and debate you before the vote. Thank you, Peter J. Peter Gold. I myself take the other view. I love nurses, and I have always written and talked about how, and I've said it on the air, and you've all heard me say it, nurses and teachers are the most important people in our society. And they're all underpaid. But on this one, I'm going the other way. I wrote a column on it in the Berkshire Eagle last week. I hope you'll read it. But Peter and I are on different sides on this one. I happen to think that if you go back to the old union days and the railroads and feather bedding, you know, in which you had to have a certain number of people, even though the technology had changed, doesn't make any sense. Now, If you see, for example, at the Berkshire Medical Center or my wonderful Fairview Hospital, which I love so much in Great Barrington, which has always taken such good care of me, is doing something that's wrong. If you can't find a nurse, if you ring the bell, if they're not there, that's another whole thing. Then there are authorities who will be able to step in and say things. But no, I don't agree with that letter, but everybody has a right to their own views.
All right, let's go go through as many letters as we can in the next 8 minutes or so.
Hillary says, panel, for the love of Pete, Malcolm, please run in 2020.
We'll send it on to him.
Yeah, okay. And Charlie says, global warming. Since president, I have an instinct for science. Loves having the name on things, his name on things. Isn't it clear that we should be calling climate change the Trump global warming? There's a nice ring to it, Charlie. Mm-hmm. Charlie. Stephen says, now that the deficit is starting to balloon, what will be the first item in the Republican attack? Social Security, welfare, Medicare, education? Lee says, congratulations, folks. Whether in front or behind the microphone, all of you are the gold standard of relevant radio broadcasting. And that's from Lee Modena. It really is. Sean says, thank you. Hello, WMC. Great fun drive. Now a question for Malcolm. Can there be any forensic evidence left in the Saudi embassy? And what the heck does our president's response to the events mean? I think he's answered that.
Yeah.
Okay. The 19th district says, Catherine, would you shed some light on what's going on in the 19th congressional district between Delgado and Faso? Which are the lies, stretches, and truths? Well, we're going to have to let you all answer that for yourselves. I myself think that, John Faso, who many people like, is not the issue. I think the issue, my own personal, not station, but personal opinion is, the issue is really flipping the House. Because right now, there is nobody to hold this president accountable, not the Senate, not the House. It's disgraceful.
Now, we should mention Monday, right, is the debate.
What is the debate?
It is the big debate between Delgado and Faso, and the two other candidates, yeah. Both the Green candidate and the Independent candidate, are going to be with us as well. And that is at, I believe that is at 1 o'clock to 2:30 on Monday.
And we will, of course, be carrying it live.
We are doing it. It's going to be right at the Linda, and you'll be at the helm, and we'll get to the bottom of a lot of these issues. So we'll see.
Jeff says, now is the time to acknowledge. Congratulations on a brief fun drive. I think it would be a great time to acknowledge why it's so important that you do the lockbox. Here we go. It's Wednesday of the same week of the fun drive. We only have missed two panels. Way to go, Jeff. I really appreciate that,
yeah,
Jeff,
that's a great
more
letter.
Than I can say, because there are some people, some of them give, some of them don't, many of them don't, who complain and gripe and say you shouldn't have a lockbox and you should only have a fun drive. But we wouldn't be on the air with a roundtable on day three of the week. So, you know, you make a good point. Betsy says, your opinions, please. I'm interested in each of your personal opinions. Do you believe the Democrats will win the midterms? Well, Betsy, I wish I could tell you. I don't think they'll take the Senate, but they may. There may be a blue wave that we don't know. So, for example, I said it on the radio this morning. Right now, Beto O'Rourke in Texas, a lot of people are counting him out and saying, well, he's 9 points behind, 8 points behind. But I know an election in Queens recently where the candidate was 50 points behind and won.
And this is a question that is always asked about this time, and I know we asked it a lot during the presidential, during the primary of the presidential campaign. But what aspect, what impact does money have? One of the things that O'Rourke is doing is really bringing in a lot of cash.
More money than any Senate candidate in history. Now, that's due to two things. People like his message, and also they don't like Cruz.
Right. And there's also and no matter where it comes from, whether it's inside the state, outside the state, which a lot of people are complaining about and on both sides of the issue. But regardless, you still have the money and it doesn't make a difference.
Of that, there is no doubt.
Doesn't hurt, right?
Betsy said that. And now Jason says, Pompeo and Prince. If you see the hearty smiles and body language as Pompeo greeted the Saudis, you know there will be no consequences for the murder would sure look that way.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see Lindsey Graham and some of the others so angry about this, Marco Rubio. Now, these guys, they don't like Trump, but they're scared of him because clearly the large percentage, over 90% of the Republican Party, love Trump. And they say so in every single poll. So you get them mad and goodbye. Goodbye. And they don't want to do that. But now is some get even time. And Lindsey Graham got a very bad notice in the Kavanaugh hearings, and this gives him a time to go back to his voters and say, see, I can criticize the guy. Kathy says, congrats to the WAMC community. Thanks to all. The racism that Mr. Faso has unleashed on the New York 19 community hit the op-ed page of the Washington Post. I think that Faso folks are afraid. They keep vandalizing the Delgado signs, damaging, now even stealing them, just like with WAMC. I'm working for a whoosh on Election Day, and that's Catherine. I am interested. I just want everybody out there to know, if somebody sends a pro-Faso letter to this panel, you're going to hear it here.
Right.
I haven't seen any yet, but you will hear it here. When we have a debate, it's not a one-sided debate. We've always had John Faso on. We've given him hours on our radio station. We've given him hours on the Congressional Corner. You all know that. We've had him, and a most unusual thing, we've had him on regularly in our Vox Pop. That's what we've done. Okay, so Bob says, Elizabeth Warren's DNA test, please comment. The president challenged her unfairly on her family's Native American heritage. She has had a professional analysis of her DNA, which shows the truth of her family's story. Now, apparently, she's in trouble for caving to the president, publicizing the test. You can't win, can you, with these guys? Nope, you cannot. Okay, and Mark says, civil discourse, morning and congrats on the fun drive. I'd like to ask you for any ideas how we can talk to the other side who has now taken to labeling us as an angry mob. Silence isn't an option, as silence is complicity. And we've heard from John, who says, I'd like to hear some comments about the voter suppression efforts and the new Supreme Court. Thanks. Well, let me tell you, you suppress the votes, you get senators elected. You saw what just happened. Ray says, voting. Alan, this is the way it should be. If you vote, you have the right to complain. If you do not vote, you do not have the right to complain when something is taken away from you, such as Social Security. Your good friend Ray. Now, Ray makes an interesting point, and I've heard it a lot. Okay, so let's try this, Joe, for a minute, if we can.
Yes.
I have a lot of friends who say, if people don't get it and vote, they deserve what they get.
Right.
Premise number one. I don't believe that. I don't believe that if somebody can't get their kid into a college or they're having substandard education, that those kids should suffer because the parents didn't go out and vote. I would like the parents to go out and vote. I think they should go out and vote. But I don't think the kids deserve what they're getting.
And same thing with healthcare, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been quite a morning, Alan. So you ended a fun drive, and it's all over. We're back to regular programming. We're gonna take a news break. When we come back, we're going to do some special stuff for the roundtable. And tomorrow we'll be back, and we'll have a normal show, and everything will be back as normal.
And once again, Joe, and I want you to not say a single word about me. I just want, no, I mean it. I just can't tell you what you mean to this station and what you've done for this station.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate it, and thanks for just letting me. It's a great, obviously a lovely home, and I think it has been for all of us, and it's a very special place to be, as evidenced by the great love and support that we've gotten over the last couple days. So, love to all. We will. I'm wrapping it up, Ray. Calm down. Good Lord. All right, back to the bickering.
Uncle Grumpy.
he's telling me to wrap it up. All right.
I love that guy.
Over to you.